It's Thursday, August 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Afghanistan's American University in Kabul is attacked.
We continue, as we did before the coup, to stand shoulder to shoulder with not only the government of Turkey, but with the people of Turkey.
The U.S. Vice President visits Turkey to shore up relations. Also ahead, a big earthquake shakes Italy, the U.S. political fringe seeking a bigger voice, and a new group shooting up the music charts. It's all on today's International Edition. At least one person has died and 25 have been wounded Wednesday in an ongoing attack at Afghanistan's American University in Kabul. A spokesman for Afghanistan's Ministry of Public Health, Waheed Marroj, told VOA the wounded include a professor and two female students. He did not give details about the person who was killed. The attack began around 6:30 p.m. local time and set off about an hour of gunfire as security forces responded. The number of attackers involved remains unclear. Officials have described the assault as a complex attack. Danish journalist Suni Rasmussen told VOA from outside of the university that the security forces were still searching for the attacker.
Yeah, well, I'm outside the university now, and there's no real sound coming from inside the campus. They are about to conduct an operation, according to the security forces here. Security forces are searching for attackers inside the university. I've spoken to some people who are there when the attack happened. They say there are several badly injured people inside, apparently. According to the emergency hospital in town, that's the preeminent hospital for war wounded in Kabul, they've only received 5 wounded people so far. But that could be because everyone is trapped inside. A lot of people are trapped inside the university. So I think we should expect the casualty numbers to rise as the evening carries on.
There was one report that there may be only one attacker, but now it appears that there may be more. Do you know anything?
No, I don't know any details. I'm not even sure the security forces know the details. They're still searching for the attackers. And I think at this point, we should probably be careful about speculating too much about how many attackers are inside. What I can say is with this type of complex attacks, normally it starts with an explosion like this one, often with a suicide bomber, and then you will have numerous attackers following up. But we don't know anything at this point.
Now, we did have a report that there were some journalists inside, but you say that the Associated Press has reported all its people are okay. Do you have any late information on that?
No. What I know is an Associated Press photographer was tweeting from inside the university at one point that he was trapped. He's one of many students at the university. He sort of fits that around his work schedule. But later, the bureau chief in town for AP said that all their staff were safe.
Rasmussen said several people inside are believed to be badly injured. Some have been carried out. And he also said some people managed to escape through a wall damaged by an explosion. There are no claims of responsibility for militant groups. The university was built with support from the United States, and it opened its doors in 2006. The university is independent, but based on the U.S. model for liberal arts and education. Time now to check out what's buzzing online. Our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, joins me here in Studio 22. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
What's trending?
A comment David Axelrod made on CNN is trending on Facebook. He was a senior advisor to President Barack Obama from 2009 to 2011, and he's now a commentator for CNN. And he said Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton should not be joking about the email server. The Republican National Committee was one of the first to repost a comment, and as you can imagine, the popular comments all slammed Clinton. But major media outlets have yet to highlight the comment.
Well, the Clinton campaign has enjoyed some support, at least the previous evening on the West Coast, right?
That's right. Celebrity couple Jessica Biel and Justin Timberlake hosted a fundraiser for Clinton at their L.A. home last night. Photos taken at a photo booth are shared on various entertainment magazines' accounts. But it seems like a lot of those who left comments were disappointed with the fact that she was there and not in Louisiana. One person wrote, Louisiana is drowning, but she gets a phone call from Justin Timberlake and they get a photo booth. That's the leader we need, right? And others still pointed out that it's nice to see a presidential candidate having fun just like the rest of us.
Absolutely. Well, let's check in on international news. Mm-hmm. What are people saying about the earthquakes in Italy?
Jim, on Twitter, it's more about what people are showing as opposed to saying. They do say a picture is worth a thousand words, right?
Mm-hmm.
Twitter users are sharing before and after photos of the earthquake, and many of these photos are from Google Maps Street View. And it's quite devastating to see the damage side by side. The overwhelming response is that of asking prayers for the victims and their families. And some commenters also wrote, prayers will be flooding because it's in Europe and not in a third world country. Hashtag pray for Italy has been trending today. Jim, back to you.
Well, thank you for the wrap-up, G. You may tweet us your comments and questions to our Twitter stream. That's at VOA underscore IE. You'll find myself and G on Twitter as well, at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, North Korean submarine launch shows progress. 6.8 magnitude earthquake shakes Myanmar. New Cambodia party aims to build political trust in countryside. China gives not so warm welcome to UN envoy. India plans surrogacy ban for foreigners and unmarried couples. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the voanews.com website. And also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. U.S. Vice President Joseph Biden is in Turkey to ease bilateral tensions following last month's coup attempt. Relations remain strained over Ankara's demand for the extradition of a cleric who Turkey accuses of being the coup ringleader. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
U.S. Vice President Joseph Biden first went to the Turkish parliament in Ankara to see the damage inflicted by planes of those seeking to seize power in last month's coup attempt. Ankara is infuriated by what it considers a slow response of its Western allies in condemning the coup and what it views as a lack of solidarity following the failed military takeover. Pro-Turkish government newspapers and government ministers have accused Washington of being complicit in the failed takeover. In a news conference with Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim, Biden addressed such allegations.
We did not have prior knowledge. We did not support. We immediately condemned, and we continue, as we did before the coup, to stand shoulder to shoulder with not only the government of Turkey, but with the people of Turkey.
Yildirim said Biden's visit helped overcome what he called the misunderstanding. He also said U.S. extradition of Turkish cleric Fethullah Gülen would help ease suspicions in Turkey. Ankara accuses Gülen of being behind the coup attempt, a charge he denies. Biden stressed Washington is cooperating with Turkey on the Gülen extradition case. Another bilateral point of contention is U.S. support of Syrian Kurdish forces, the YPG, in the war against the Islamic State. Ankara accuses the Syrian Kurds of links to the Turkish Kurdish group, the PKK, which is fighting the Turkish government. But Biden supported Ankara's call for the YPG to withdraw back across the Euphrates River.
We have made it absolutely clear to the elements that were part of the Syrian Democratic Forces, the YPG that participated, that they must move back across the river. They cannot, will not, and under no circumstances get American support if they do not keep that commitment, period.
The YPG crossed the Euphrates River as part of an offensive to remove the Islamic State from the Syrian city of Manbij. Large numbers of Turkish forces have entered Syria to oust the Islamic State from the border town of Jarabulus. But Turkish leaders say the operation is also aimed at stopping Syrian Kurds. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
A strong earthquake shook central Italy early Wednesday, causing extensive damage to areas near the epicenter. The U.S. Geological Survey put the magnitude at 6.2, with an epicenter about 10 kilometers southeast of the town of Norcia. The quake struck just after 3:30 in the morning local time and was felt across a broad section of central Italy, including the capital, Rome. It was not immediately known if there were any casualties. VOA's Jemmy Detmer is in Italy, and he spoke more about the earthquake with International Edition host Sarah Williams.
So far, we know that three villages, at least, all three were to the southeast of Norcia, which had the, which was at the epicenter, had been severely damaged. One or two, people are talking about having been leveled. None of the big cities so far have suffered any extensive damage, but this tremor at 3:36, which was, you know, variously reported between 6.2 and 6.4, on the Richter scale, was felt as far north as Bologna, even further, actually, down in Rome and south of Rome as well. We're getting considerable number of aftershocks, so about 80 have been reported across the country. Where I am in Montefiore at Dalasso, which is a village just off the Adriatic coast, about 115 kilometres from the epicentre, as well as the big jolt at 3:36, which lasted for nearly 30 seconds, we felt three or four other jolts as well. Couple lasting about 20 seconds.
Well, since this area is near the Adriatic coast, are there a lot of tourists there at this time?
There are quite a few Italian tourists. It's running towards the end of the season. I'm staying at a hotel I've been at before, Hotel Magnolia. Beautiful hotel above a picturesque valley which runs into the Adriatic. Most of the guests here, most of the guests we've seen in the villages around are Italians. It's towards the end of the summer. So most of the North European families have disappeared. Obviously, they've got kids going back to school. So it's towards the end of the season. There's many Italian holidaymakers here.
Has the Italian military been involved in some of the recovery efforts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're using any services they can to try to get to the sites of the damage. I mean, obviously, there's nervousness because we've had so many after jolts that there could be some more big ones to come. Interestingly, since about Saturday, I'd noticed when I was looking at an earthquake tracker last night, we all left the hotel after the first shock as a precaution in case there were more to come. The hotel stood up magnificently to the jolt. But there have been a series of slight tremors really since Saturday, Sunday, Monday. On the tracker, there had been some other much smaller jolts that no one really had felt virtually every day. So there was some kind of pattern leading up to this.
Is this area, I believe this area is on a fault?
Yes, of course it is. And, of course, there's a lot of concern about 6-7 years ago, 2009, at L'Aquila, which a big city in central Italy as well, that got tremendously hammered by an earthquake. We seem to be getting in central Italy, in the provinces of Umbria, Marche, Lazio, an earthquake about every 3 or 4 years. There was another big one about 3 years ago in the Abruzzi, another central province of Italy.
What about any international efforts to assist the people affected by this earthquake? Have you seen any of that?
I haven't heard of any yet. I mean, I think the Italians got it under control at this stage. I'm sure they won't say no to any help particularly, but I mean, we are in the early hours after the initial big trembler. And so they're trying also to assess damage. I mean, there's been some natural damage as well. The Gran Sasso, which is part of a mountain range in the middle of Italy, apparently some rock has fallen down from there. So there's concern also about those mountains as well as, obviously, habitations.
VOA's Jamie Detmer. Later today in U.S. presidential politics, Democrat presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton will deliver a speech on the alternative right, an anti-establishment nationalist political movement that has come to the forefront in recent months. The alt-right received a big boost last week after Republican candidate Donald Trump named one of its most vocal defenders, Steve Bannon, to serve as CEO of his presidential campaign. Bannon runs the conservative website Breitbart, which is a major platform for the alt-right movement. VOA reporter William Gallo spoke with Daryl Lamont Jenkins of the One People's Project about the origins of the alt-right and whether he thinks it will endure as part of the U.S. political landscape.
I am very apprehensive about using the term alt-right or alternative right because, in truth, it really is just another term that certain white supremacists out there have been using to avoid calling themselves white supremacists or even white nationalists.
So Steve Bannon, when confronted with the accusations of racists within the alt-right, has said that, sure, there are some racists within the movement, there are some anti-Semites within the movement, but then he sort of compared it to the way that within far-left groups and progressive groups, there are some extremists as well, basically saying that, well, there are just some bad apples in the bunch. What do you say to that? Is that a fair representation of what the alt-right is?
No, and you can never really expect anything fair coming from Steve Bannon or Breitbart. The alternative right, they're not some alternative bad apples in the alternative right. The alternative right are the bad apples. So for Bannon to try to downplay it is just disingenuous, and basically him trying to more or less protect the alternative right.
Where do you think this movement goes from here? I mean, as you've said, they've achieved a degree of success in recent months. A lot of that has correlated with the Donald Trump campaign. And who knows if Donald Trump will win or lose. But, I mean, will this outlast Trump?
They hope so. They're looking at this as a more or less a come-up. They're looking at this as more or less a way to advance themselves regardless of if Trump wins or loses. So, I mean, we have to be mindful of the fact that they intend to be here for the long haul. They want to maintain those old politics that were successful in the past.
Daryl Lamont Jenkins of the One People's Project speaking with Bill Gallo. As the U.S. political process continues leading up to the November 8th election, you can follow it all on our website at voanews.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter as well at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. A new group is rocketing up the music charts. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London, along with Sarah Williams, tell us more.
Well, right now, Sarah, the in trend is something called EDM, electronic dance music. And if you look at the charts, it's filled with these electronic producer DJ types like David Guetta, Calvin Harris, who Forbes says was the top DJ and money-making DJ, $63 million this past year.
So not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Big business there. And there's a whole bunch of others, you know, Zedd and Diplo and Major Lazer are on the rise. They're at number two on the charts with the song with Justin Bieber these days. The Chainsmokers. That's the name of today's group, The Chainsmokers, which is an American duo for a change. Usually these groups are from Europe. But this time around, it's the American team of Andrew Taggart and Alex Paul, and they decided to form this electronic dance music thing they call the Chainsmokers. In 2011, of all things, they recorded a song. Their very first song was with an Indian actress, Priyanka Chopra. It was a song called Erase. It did okay, did better in India, obviously, than it did in the United States. But right after that, they released a song called Selfie that did put them on the map and establish themselves, you know, riding on the trend of social media and everybody taking their cell phone out and taking selfies. Mm-hmm. And then they followed that up with a whole bunch of other songs and an EP called Bouquet. Right now, they're number one on the charts. They are the new number one act with the new number one song, and that's called Closer. And they don't even have a new album for it. It's just a single, but it's number one. So let's listen.
Look as good as the day I met you. I forget just why I left you. I was insane. Stay and play that
that Blink-182 song that we beat to death in Tucson, okay.
So eventually, will there be an album around this then?
That's the hope. But they've released a bunch of singles. And that seems to be the way that these electronic dance music producers do, is they release singles, they release mixtapes, they do anything except studio albums. The trend in the industry now is going away from albums because it's hard to sell albums right now. With everybody being able to go to Spotify or iTunes and buy one song at a time, you know, the idea of a $15 or $20 album is hard to sell these days. So that's where it's, you know, difficult unless you're a Taylor Swift or an Adele. But the Chainsmokers are doing well. And the song features a young 21-year-old New Jersey singer named Halsey. That's not a real name. She's Italian. Her real name is Ashley Frangipani. But she goes by Halsey, and she's another singer on the rise. She does the vocals for the song we just heard, Closer. And her debut album came out last year called Badlands. Not doing as well as Chainsmokers are doing right now. They're both on tour. They're both performing at various different festivals throughout the country. And that seems to be the current trend, electronic dance music. Who knows how long we'll ride that wave, but that's where it's at right now.
And where are the Chainsmokers from?
Those two guys are both from New York, okay. New York City. And they recorded most of their albums and their music in New York City.
Thanks very much. That's Larry London. He is host of VOA's Border Crossings.
You've been listening to International Edition. For director Tracy Carter and engineer Carl Starling, I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Religious freedom remains a concern in China. According to the recently released 2015 State Department International Religious Freedom Report, the Chinese government continued to exercise state control over the practice of religion. Over this past year, reports continued to surface that the government physically abused, detained, arrested, tortured, incarcerated, or harassed adherents of both registered and unregistered religious groups for activities related to their beliefs and practices. Human rights organizations stated that police shot and killed Uyghur Muslims during house raids and protests after the introduction of stricter government controls on religious expression and practice in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. A Falun Gong group reported abductions, detention, and a death in police custody related to adherents' belief and practices. According to media and non-governmental reports, seven Tibetans self-immolated during the year in protests of restrictive government policies. Authorities often justified official scrutiny of Tibetan Buddhist monasteries by associating expression of Tibetan Buddhist faith with separatism and pro-independence activities. According to NGO and press reports, authorities in Zhejiang province ordered the removal of more than 105,000 crosses on Christian churches and the demolition of some church buildings as part of a campaign against illegal structures. Many Zhejiang pastors and congregants openly resisted the campaign, resulting in the detention of several church leaders and activists, including Pastor Huang Yizi and lawyer Zhang Kai. Local authorities in many areas used a variety of means to punish members of unregistered religious or spiritual groups, including Christian house churches. Authorities in Guangdong province sentenced Buddhist leader Wu Zeheng to life in prison on what advocacy groups stated were politically motivated charges. As a signatory of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, China made a commitment to respect the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. When a government denies religious liberty, it turns citizens who have done nothing wrong into criminals, igniting tension that breeds contempt, hopelessness, and alienation, said Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken at the release of the 2015 International Religious Freedom Report. Deputy Secretary Blinken went on to say, "Religious pluralism shows respect for the beliefs of every citizen and gives each a tangible reason to contribute to the success of the entire society. That's why no nation can fulfill its potential if its people are denied the right to freely choose and openly practice their faith."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.